Blog Talk Radio.
Tuned into the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen over in Studio A, and Mr. Ronald A. Edwards is over in Studio B. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you doing this snowy evening? Where did this come from?
Well, this is April in Minnesota, Don. You know, we get this on almost an annual basis. In fact, you got to remember last April, the whole month of April was filled with snow. We didn't see really any green grass, and then it rained in all of May. So we should have had an indication that we were going to have the kind of winter that we were exposed to for 2013, 2014. So this is Minnesota, man. You know, This is, weather comes in a cycle, Don. Probably the pioneers, quote unquote, the people of the prairie had this same kind of weather pattern about 110 years ago. You know what I mean? Read the Farmer's Almanac.
I was checking that out online, actually, and there's some interesting things getting ready to happen, because I remember in 2011 it snowed on April 20th.
That's right.
Yes, I remember that. And
we had a little snow on the ground there around May 3rd, 4th of last year. But we got some guests down, I understand, with some important information while we have you segue them in, and let's get to it.
We'll do that. Yeah, we'd like to let all our listeners, local, national, international, know that next week at Hamline University, it's Veterans Appreciation Week, and there's tons of activities going on. You can check out the Hamline University Veterans Affairs Facebook page if you want to find out the activities. But there's one thing that's going on that was very interesting, and we have a couple of guests. And they're going to explain, Mr. Edwards, what's going on, what they're doing in an effort to distribute this information out to our listeners and for our listeners to share it with other people, because it's for veterans and the DAV. But, hey, you know, I'm going to let them go ahead and introduce themselves.
All right, let's welcome them aboard. Why don't you identify them by name, Don?
Eddie and Alyssa, would you like to come on, please?
Hey. Ron and Don, this is Eddie Slater, and
my name's Elena Jimenez.
Hey, how are you?
All right, welcome. Go ahead, Don.
Hey,
tell us about this event that you have going on.
Okay, well, our organization is called Hamline Cares. We were created within a management course here at Hamline, and we are hosting a 5K called the Stars and Stripes 5K next Saturday, April 26th. And it's not necessarily a run. It's open to all ages and all types of athletes. Walkers and rollers are welcome. It'll be at Lake Phelan in St. Paul. And all proceeds go to the DAV, which stands for Disabled American Veterans. But it'll stay within our state. So we're just trying to spread the word as fast as we can. We didn't have a lot of time to get this thing rolling, but we're really excited about it, and we're glad to be on your show tonight.
Well, you're doing a great job. So what time does this start? It's next Saturday, and what time does it start?
Registration and check-in begins at 8 a.m. Pre-registration is $20, so it's cheaper to register beforehand. You can register as an individual or as a team. To register on race day, it was $25. The 5K itself begins at 9 a.m. Again, it's at Lake Phelan. Pretty cool course.
Okay, wow. So now you said this is part of a management class that you're doing. Are there other events going on? We love this event because this is a veterans event, but are there other events connected with the class that you're connected with, or you just don't want to give them any props on the radio? You just want to promote yours?
Well, yeah, there is also a water pong event here on campus. I think it'll be in our Theta Chi frat. That's with the other section of the course. We haven't been able to it's a different thing, but we're excited for them too. We hope they have a good turnout as well.
Okay, now is there a website that we can direct our listeners to find out more information to register online?
Our website is actually linked to our Facebook. Our Facebook is Hamlin Cares, and we also have a Twitter, Star Stripes 5K, that gives a lot more information about how you can register and information about the website. The website link itself is a little bit interesting, and we couldn't get a real name for it, but you can get through it through the Facebook page.
Okay, let me ask a couple questions here. This is very commendable. I just have felt for a long time our veterans really don't get the kind of, particularly disabled veterans, don't get the kind of respect that they deserve as it pertains mm-hmm. to. They have nothing to do with the politics of this country, but they certainly have to do a lot to do with the safety of the nation. Are other state colleges like St. Thomas, McAllister, Bethel, UMD, are other Minnesota colleges and universities participating on the same date this coming weekend? Is that being coordinated, or is it basically Hamlin going it alone?
Well, this is it's funny. This is very unique to Hamlin. It's the second year we've done this, and we're really thankful that the DAV was so welcoming to our support. And, yeah, we didn't collaborate with any other Minnesota State schools. They just opened us up to take it over, and they're trusting us and our skills to make sure that we get enough runners and enough donations that it can help keep support to all disabled veterans across the state. And it's pretty much up to us as a school to get this done.
Okay, all right. And I assume in a situation as patriotic as the 5K, this 5K, that you have the full support of the administration there at Hamlin?
Absolutely.
Okay. Is there, let me just give you a kind of an observation, are there any disabled veterans, both male and female, that maybe you're thinking about, like, you know, having at the finish line and having them give the awards out and at the same time honor them? Or have you given any thought to that? Do you have anybody in mind?
We've been currently talking about having little American flags that we can give to the veterans that do attend the race so that
okay.
we can have some recognition as we go. We really do encourage that any runners or people that attend do talk to the veterans that attend, because we really want to make sure that we're showing our support and showing how much we do care, obviously the Hamlin Cares, that it's not just Hamlin, it's everyone that is attending and everyone that has donated, that we're showing our support, that all proceeds are going to the DAV as well.
All right. Let me ask you this question. Are either one of you children of military veterans?
I'm myself not. Both of my grandfathers were. One of them fought in World War II over in the Philippines. He was a Navy pilot, and then another one was in the Korean War. So I have a lot of respect, naturally, for our veterans, and I'm super excited to be involved with them. We haven't.
So, in other words, you have two members of your family, your grandfathers, who served in military campaigns. One in World War II, one in Korea. And
okay.
Young lady, what about yourself?
Myself.
Yeah, young lady, what about yourself?
I don't have a lot of connections to veterans myself. However, my grandfather was a firefighter, so he still worked for the state of Boston.
He was a Boston, a firefighter? Is that right? All right, commendable, commendable. A lot of pride in Boston, Massachusetts, about firefighters. Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
I mean, my heart still goes out to those who do give back, especially for a country, whether or not it's, like, for the country itself or for the state, like policemen, firemen,
mm-hmm.
people in the military. I really do appreciate that, and we want to show that as a class and as a school that, you know, that college students are more aware than a lot of people.
Okay. All right. Mr. Allen, I'll let you go ahead and wrap it up.
I think this is
a very worthy activity, if you will. It's really too bad that maybe we couldn't have encouraged more of the Minnesota State Colleges to be involved. Probably was something that the State College Board and its chairman should have been paying attention to, the importance of our disabled veterans.
I agree 100%. Yeah, well, it's commendable what you guys are doing there on campus, and we look forward to hanging out with you in the Anderson Center next week, building capacity. We actually have the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans coming out Wednesday from 11:30 to 12:45 to table with us. I figured out how to do that, Edward. And so they'll be in the Anderson Forum. Actually, Mr. Edwards, you actually spoke during Black History Month at the Indiana
Anderson
Forum.
Yes, I did.
Yes,
I did. Yes. Was very appreciative of the invitation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so we're going to have the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and they're on board. They want to meet Ed. So, Ed, next week at around that time, if you can talk to these guys, they want to get your message out to help you guys get people signed up. With that said, in closing, is there anything else either one of you'd like to say?
Yeah, we just wanted to first off say thank you again for having us on your show. And then for the people listening, if you didn't hear already, you can find us at Hamlin Cares on Facebook. And if you have any – oh, and also on Twitter at Stars and Stripes 5K. And if you have any direct questions or you want to go ahead and support us right away, you can forward all your questions to hamlincares@gmail.com, just like that.
Okay, and well, I'd like to thank both of you for calling in tonight, and it is next Saturday, and we have another show on Wednesday, so we'll have you to come back and give us a short update in the beginning of the show to see kind of where you're at to build some capacity for you and some following, and so we'll appreciate both of you taking your time out tonight to come on the show, and have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you as well.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Mr. Edwards, we're back in business here. Now we get to the nitty-gritty of things. You know,
well, that was nitty-gritty, Don. That you know, any time that you get young people who commit themselves to display their appreciation for those that not only served this country but made it safe for all of us, particularly when you talk about the young man who both his grandfathers served in two campaigns, the Second World War in the Philippines mm-hmm. and Korea. When you get that kind of commitment, because so many people, as you know, Don, is a veteran. Mr. Allen is a veteran of the United States Army, that so many of our people are dismissive of what our veterans do, and particularly when you talk about veterans who have become disabled, and particularly those that have lost limb and et cetera, or those that have suffered the psychological pain of war. So I really, on a personal note, commend them and the students at Hamlin that are participating in making that kind of commitment. It's kind of rare sometimes in this country. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. I agree. You know, it's really funny, Mr. Edwards, because we had and I'll just share this with you, and you know, we had a few people from different colleges around the city, a few veterans just kind of leave, drop out of the system because they were getting treated pretty bad. And it's terrible that happens, but, you know, there are programs that take care of veterans when they're in college, and the veteran has a right to have every program that he or she qualifies for. And when you start treating that veteran who is in school, be it on Hamlin's campus, University of Minnesota, St. Thomas, Bethel, anywhere else, when you start treating them like welfare recipients instead of the soldiers that they were, mm-hmm. you know, that puts a bad taste in a lot of our mouths, and we don't appreciate
yes.
that at all. And okay. you just lose them. You know, if someone's paying your bill for the veteran to be there, and you treat them like welfare recipients, you know, not saying you're not supposed to treat basically what I'm trying to say is, you know, they just treat some of the veterans really bad, and it's unfortunate,
yeah.
but that happens. That happens quite a bit. So maybe one day
Well, I remember you two settings here in the last 6 months, you made those similar kinds of statements mm-hmm. and appeals for respect and compassion for our veterans. I know you were a guest speaker at the Veterans Administration at Fort Snelling. And you did a piece down in, I don't know if it was Normandale College, but you did a piece down in Dakota County.
Yeah.
Okay. So I noted. All right. Okay. I know you kind of been out there. All right. Why don't we give that number? Phone lines will be open. We've got a couple of national news stories that we'll certainly be taking a look at. But,
yes.
you know, phone line is open. What do we have up, Mr. Allen?
Well, you know, I was, again, Mr. Edwards, here was another week, another day that is historically significant. And I'm just kind of waiting for people. It's kind of all over the media, but if you're in touch with what your circumstance is, what do they say? Looking backwards in the mirror, you know that some things have happened. When you look backwards into the mirror, you see what's behind you, basically. So today, mm-hmm. in 1862, President Lincoln abolished slavery in D.C., District of Columbia, on this day in 1862, and there was a huge celebration. The Emancipation Proclamation didn't become national law until January 1st, 1863, and it freed millions of slaves, you know, gave them freedom. And this was a celebratory day for blacks in America. And, you know, we're not finding that history, and it's really terrible that, you know, on social media like Facebook and things like that, you don't see any of the, you know, 21 plus and even the older cats on Facebook writing, you know, hey, on this day, you know, this is a history lesson for everybody here. And so, I mean, that things like that happen, but, you know, you're just wondering where people's heads are at, you know?
And, well, you know, we probably could have this with greater detail and specificity if we had our history museum, and on that particular note, I'm being told by the Star Tribune and others that there has been a reorganization of the previous board of the, you remember the Minnesota Black History Museum that was going to open its doors back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that our friend, our Professor Pounds at St. Thomas is now the chairperson at the of the new board, if you will. But they've already indicated that they will not be talking about what happened to the $3 million.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
That's a very interesting, you know, how can we move forward and solve these issues, Mr. Edwards? Because it doesn't make any sense. $3 million, what is that? There's a museum in Des Moines, Iowa. If I'm not mistaken, I think we reported it here. They opened
about 4 months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. They opened like a log cabin African-American museum for under $1 million with artifacts that were incredible, where they got people reached out and touched them from the Smithsonian. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we get $3 million. Well, not we, but we have individuals, you know, placeholders here in town that get that kind of money. And we don't have an African-American museum. We don't really celebrate any African-American holidays. I know some of the white listeners that have contacted me and said, you know, well, why do you guys have to have your own holidays? Well, why y'all, you know, why are you complaining about that? Well, one reason why we're complaining is because there's really no equity. You know, the mayor talks about equity, well, about equity in potholes in her latest pothole response. But, you know, we know that equity in potholes has nothing to do with the kind of equity we're talking about right now. And so if you're going to be real about it, there has to be a fair playing field, because I have a really good friend. He's a white dude. He works in corporate America. He probably is listening right now to the show but won't call in. He says, Don, you know what? He said, there's $1 million for every one of y'all out there, the high-profile, mm-hmm. the community activists, the civil rights leaders. But you have a cancer with a few circles of these African-American leaders that forget that there's a Mr. Ron Edwards, that forgets there's a Mr. Don Allen, that forgets there's a Larry Tucker, Lenny Chisholm, or Terrence, or people like that out there with the technical and theoretical knowledge to put pieces together to make things function and move forward. So when they forget about that broad voice in the African-American community, they are trained by the mainstream to take pennies. Like you train a dog to jump up and sit and bark and roll over. They're trained they're trained to take $700,000 out of a $1.3 billion, you know, stadium and land deal when you add up the money the Star Tribune got and all these other folks. Actually, it's more than that. And so, I mean, when you're looking at that, you know, you finally figure out that, wow, you know, we're really getting screwed and there's no Vaseline in sight. But with that said, Mr. Edwards, we got some national news that we need to talk about also.
Well, let me say just one thing on this piece of information you provided to our listening audience locally, domestically, and internationally, is that It's ironic, and again, it's the genesis. It is definitely the genesis for my comments that I chose to highlight that. President Abraham Lincoln desegregates Washington, D.C. in 1862. And people pretend that they don't understand the history of the black codes and such things as that. And it is ironic that approximately 52 years later, a president by the name of Woodrow Wilson resegregated Washington, D.C. in 1914. And it was not to be quote-unquote, integrated again until somewhat after the Second World War. Isn't that a fascinating piece of the history that that we should, our children and the children of other groups and races should have knowledge of and maybe periodically discuss it? Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln desegregates Washington, D.C. in 1862, and a man by the name of Wilson from Virginia, if you will, resegregates it in 1914. That is fascinating. But go ahead, Don. What are we looking at with respect to the nation? What have you got?
Well, we're just talking about this this shooting spree. A couple of people killed in Overland Park, Kansas. And I kind of want to get your take on that because I know you know that area very well. And
yes. In fact, I had a chance to talk to over the last 4 days, authorities as well as knowledgeable civil rights activists there in the greater Kansas City area. Overland Park is like Edina, if you will, but just larger, if you will. That is right adjacent to Kansas City, Kansas. You know, you have two Kansas cities, Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri. They're like Minneapolis, St. Paul, right across the rivers from each other, but in different states, whereas, you know, of course, here, St. Paul and Minneapolis are in the same state. Their analysis, I had a conference call today with a fellow journalist in the Kansas City area because they're really trying to get a better feel for the terrorist, if you will. By the way, you notice the majority media is staying away from identifying him as a terrorist. That clearly is what he was. Mm-hmm. He acted as a terrorist when he went into a Jewish community center in Overland Park, shot a retired doctor and his grandson to death, and then, for whatever reason, got in his car and drove to a Jewish retirement home and killed the first person he saw coming out of the door. What was ironic about this white supremacist, if you will, and I mean, this guy is a serious person. He's been a serious activist and murderer for a long time, by the way. He has quite an interesting history. New York Times and others have been talking about it, but I have been aware of him and his organizations for better than 30-some years. But the people, the three human beings that he killed, all of them were Christians. There were none of them were Jewish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this guy's coordination and planning was so off the chart, if you will. I mean, he goes to two Jewish facilities, but he just kills the first people he walks up on, all right? I mean, and it's just so tragic, so unnecessary, so vile, if you will. But here's the thing that they're not talking about in many of the national media that we certainly here are talking about on this program, and the Ronnie Donnie gang, if you will, and that is that that this murderer actually has been for many years a government informant.
What?
Yeah, he's government informant.
I haven't read that anywhere. We're getting an exclusive right here.
And what happened is that 35 years ago, he put together quite a militia group because he's been involved and been a member of both the Ku Klux Klan and the states' rights / neo-Nazis. Now, I first became aware of him specifically, as I said, about 30 years ago as an outgrowth of an incident just outside of Cameron, Missouri, which for those that maybe travel to Kansas City, they go by as they go down Highway 35 from Minneapolis to Kansas City and then Kansas City to Wichita and then Oklahoma City and on into Dallas and then on in from there down to Laredo. And this guy was scary then, Don. Frazier was a scary individual, if you will. He was obsessed with his racism, and he equally displayed it between African Americans, or Negroes, if you will, and Jewish people, and any others, the gays, if you will, and et cetera. But people were suspicious and became concerned because he had such a significant rite of passage, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean, Mr. Allen, in military okay. terms. And he was a suspect on a number of occasions up around northern Missouri and through that area in the mysterious deaths of young African-Americans who unfortunately were traveling on the road. Now, there's certainly a population of African-Americans in that part of Missouri, back towards St. Joe's and et cetera, for folks that maybe don't, you know the landscape. It is up around the area of St. Joe's and then coming back to the east, going towards Warrensburg and places like that. And he was a member at that time of a very violent states' rights group up there in that part of Missouri, as well as he's been involved in activities around Joplin, Missouri, and back towards Chanute, Kansas, and Ottawa, Kansas, and et cetera. So this guy was well known to the feds and et cetera, but folks could not understand how nothing was apparently happening. But he became a significant player when weapons were stolen from military depots in North Carolina, and then later he was involved in a similar pattern almost 20 years later at Fort Lewis, Washington, which I think you're familiar with that particular military reserve. And he had a pretty well-armed group. They were involved in a number of situations, including a major confrontation in Illinois in which a number of left-wing, quote-unquote, activists were shot and killed, if you will. Well, anyways, because of the weapons and the theft from a military depot, if you will, the feds decided they didn't have any choice but to round his buddies up and et cetera. But lo and behold, he was introduced in court as a state's witness and as a longtime FBI informant.
Oh, wow.
And this is something that they're really trying to stay away from, because I have to tell you that at one point in time, in some documents by our a agent, if you will, of the NSA, I think you know who I'm talking about, Mr. Snowden, mm-hmm. that some telephone conversations were intercepted with regards to Frazier and his discussions and Mr. Cross, we'll give him his full name, Frazier Glenn Cross. He also used the name Frazier Glenn Miller because he was a big fan of the late band leader Glenn Miller. Think about it.
Yeah,
this guy is a piece of work, and he's grown weak, and he has been ill. He just lost two of his adult children over the last couple of years, so he's very bitter. He maintains that it was Jew doctors that misdiagnosed him, and et cetera. But it was his relationship as a confidential informant for the FBI that's got a lot of discussion going on in Kansas City right now. And certainly it's generating a lot of press. See, this is not like he killed some black folks and you can kind of just politically dismiss it. You know, the Jewish community in greater Kansas City and throughout the Midwest are enraged, even though none of his victims were Jewish. But the fact of the matter is that they were killed in or outside of Jewish institutions and et cetera. But for some of my black journalist friends in Kansas City, they've said, look, this guy has been on the radar for years as a suspect in the killing of young African Americans, particularly along 35W and here in greater Kansas City kind of thing. So this man is more of a danger than people can begin to imagine. But what happened, he's been sick, and people are now saying that what he wanted to do was go out with a bang, And so that is what has happened. The FBI was asked yesterday if there was the possibility of others being involved. You know, this has become kind of a standard response from the Federal Bureau of Investigation that the individual acted alone. And the fact of the matter is some of the electronic intercepts of some of his discussions with some of his buddies, because he had been working for a long time to get back in the good graces of his white supremacist friends. Now, you find it interesting, though, they found out that he was a government informant, yet he was never killed.
Yes.
So that meant that he had some protection, and there was an understanding, Mr. Allen, about what his role was to be. That, you know, he maybe had misstepped a little bit and a tad, testified against his colleagues. He only did, I think it was 6 years or thereabouts when he should have did 40. In fact, he probably should still be in the penitentiary if he would have been, if he would have received the punishment that the law dictates. But this guy was a long-time confidential informant for the FBI. Now,
Wow. Okay.
A couple years ago, less than a decade ago, we came across him again out in Idaho, where he was involved in training. He's quite a training expert, Mr. Allen. You would have appreciation as a former military person. He was well adapted in our covert operations, tracking, and such things as that. And he and a group of white extremists, in fact, over the years on these programs, every once in a while I will kind of surprise you and give a shout-out to Billy Bob out there in Sandpoint, Idaho. And the training area that they utilize up around a place called Spirit River and the Spirit Lake and et cetera in that part of Idaho. Now, this was an area in which about 15 years ago, at least three young African Americans who actually were traveling from coming through the Twin Cities disappeared. All three of them were involved in being stopped by the sheriff out there in Sandpoint, and all of them mysteriously wound up dead, if you will. Bodies found later on out there in that rugged country. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Yeah.
And so that's some of the history of Mr. Cross, if you will. He was not a guy to be played with, okay? Now, some are maintaining, though, the prosecutor in Kansas is saying they're going to ask for the death penalty at some point, et cetera. Our prediction is that he will die while in custody.
Oh, wow.
Okay?
Okay.
And for those that are, you know, asking again, what's he talking about, Sandpoint, where is that, like they can't find it, it's in the so-called Upper Butte of Idaho. And it's south of Bonners, if you will. And it actually is on the road that that comes out of Canada and goes down and goes into Spokane, where Mr. Cross was quite an operator. In fact, some, in closing, let me say this, some felt that this white supremacist was involved in the planning. And by the way, the chemicals and explosive devices were taken and stolen from your Fort Lewis, Washington, that he was involved in what almost was a successful bombing of the Martin Luther King Day celebration in Spokane, Washington, a couple years ago. Okay? This is who Mr. Cross really is. And he was not a guy that was just some clown, if you will. And for those of you that have come out of Canada and you traveled down Route 2 and 95, if you will, going up to Highway 90 to the south, if you will, going into Spokane, these old boys have been watching you for a long time. But their training grounds, as I said before, and that's rugged country, Don. It's real rugged country, but they do a lot of training up there, shoot a lot of weapons, if you will. And as I said before, it's up around the Priest River and Priest Lake. Okay? And
okay.
This is the kind of individual that Mr. Cross is, if you will. So we just thought we would be due diligent here on tonight's program and just talk a little bit about him and talk about the activities outside of Sandpoint, Idaho, and the activities to the west, if you will, of Sandpoint. A couple years ago, we gave the addresses of where some of the meetings were taking place. Oops. And folks were, you know, trying to wonder how a Negro could find that kind of information out. Well, we find it out just like other people find out things. You know what I'm saying? They're not the only ones that can conduct a covert operation. Oops. But anyways, that's kind of the background. Any questions as we wrap that and move on?
Well, we like to open up the phone lines. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. The phone lines are wide open. Give us a call if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or a topic.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, I find this really interesting because I told you in the production meeting, I received pictures of him in uniform, in his KKK stuff, and his militant marching with his beret. And I put actually
yes,
them on our
with
show
the Christian
page.
Cross on the front. Yes, yes.
Yes, sir.
He
yes,
looked
sir.
Quite impressive. Camouflage
yeah.
uniforms and et cetera. We had pictures of him back in the 1970s. I mean, he was carrying state-of-the-art weaponry, if you will, automatic weapons and sidearms and et cetera. And it finally was that caused the feds, because what happened was Morris Deese, the Poverty Law Center down there in Montgomery, who actually they were planning to kill a couple years ago, started forcing the government's hand, particularly the ATF, by saying, look here, you know, Billy Bob is not carrying an old, you know, over and under or some old antique. I mean, these guys are carrying new modern weapons. Where in the heck are they getting them from? Well, they were getting them from their operatives who are in the military and who were making the information available from the supply depot North Carolina, and specifically Fort Lewis, Washington, if you will, and Camp Lejeune in the Carolinas. So this is not a guy that you just pass off as some nut who got up on a particular day, if you will, and decided he was going to go out and act crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Edwards, we're getting a lot of texts. The chat room is full, and I'm going to invite people again to call in if you have questions, because tonight I'm not answering no texts or no chats. You have to call in and ask a question. I'm just not doing it tonight because there's too much going on. We got an hour and a half show tonight, and we need to get this information out. Actually, we can run an hour and a half if we need to. And so what I'm looking at here, too, Mr. Edwards, not to change the subject, but I am looking at a Burnsville man charged with luring teen girl to home and sexually assaulting her.
Okay, well, why don't you give us kind of an idea about this man? He first emerged here within the leadership community around 2011. I've got a call coming in, and I'll break off, and I'll be back in about,
give him that background. Okay, you
got you. Go ahead. All right.
Tell our listeners again, 347-426-3904. But this is very interesting, and I know people are tuned in right now, so let me walk you through this. This guy, Eric Rutherford, of course, he is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. But in 2013, he was convicted in Ramsey County of a gross misdemeanor criminal sexual conduct in April 2013. He served 150 days in jail and was given 2 years probation. Oops, he might be going to jail again. Anyway, this is the guy that Lewis King and the tornado relief people wrote a check via Emerge for $4,500 to do fundraisers for North Minneapolis. No one had ever seen this guy. Ever. And he just started coming to the meetings and said, oh, I do this, I do that, I do that. And he gave Lewis King and the leadership of the Tornado Recovery Group, the NCRT, kind of like a go-to person. You know, you could do this. Actually, the guy couldn't do squat. He's full of crap. And what had happened was he didn't come through with anything for them. There was no fundraisers at the Mall of America, you know, and Mr. Edwards, we didn't see any fundraisers happening through the money that Lewis King and those guys gave this Eric Rutherford in 2011.
That's what I understand, and I know that was unfortunately one of the reasons that Karen Alawuda, who was actually number two person at the Minneapolis Foundation, who was pushed out of her position because she became concerned about the accurateness and the authenticity of the documentation that was being presented that allegedly showed, you know, receipt of monies, expenditures, and et cetera, and, you know, as an outgrowth of that. In fact, at one point, we received a letter from attorneys for somebody who presented or pretended to present her, saying that we could not talk about this situation on the air. And I think this was back in 2012. And, of course, we laughed and moved on. Karen, very well respected. I think 23 years at the Minneapolis Foundation, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
She really treated everyone equally, but she really was a godsend for a lot of our, quote-unquote, leaders back in the day and right up until 2011, if you will, until she was stabbed in the back. And like I said, pushed out. In fact, I heard a story about 4 months ago that at one point, in order to try to soften the blow, she was being promised the position that later was given to former Mayor R.T. Ryback. Yeah. And so I, you know, need to remind people there is a history, if you will. And I know they accuse this program of just doing sensationalism and making reflection statements and et cetera, but, you know, we always indicate the documentation is there. In fact, I think it was about 8 weeks ago we pulled out from the files a letter that was sent out to corporate Minnesota from the Minneapolis Foundation announcing, you know, how their money was being handled. Remember
mm-hmm.
that?
Yep. Oh,
yeah. And so but that phone line is open. You know, we discussed some things, ranging everything from disabled veterans and an excellent program for the next weekend, if you will. And, of course, we've talked about maybe the national piece is a little bit more than maybe some of the folks can handle. I don't know. But what you've just been talking about certainly can be handled, because we just need to get an understanding of how things are going. We hear stories that the numbers on the Viking Stadium, as an example, are pure, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never actually seen any. We haven't seen a breakdown. See, that's the key. Haven't seen a breakdown. And I have called in my columns for the last 3 years that there be a annual audit, if you will, of those numbers, a forensic examination or forensic audit, as they like to identify it, so that the numbers can be verified, et cetera. We don't have to go through what the community had to go through with respect to the Twins Stadium, and mm-hmm. the fact that no African-Americans really worked down there, you know, mm-hmm. definitely no, with the exception of TAG construction, oops, there was no significant dollars. And, of course, Thor received a portion of quote-unquote money, but nothing approaching what was being said. And now we're hearing that the workforce is already 32%, you know, women and persons of color. That's just not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%.
And you must be getting some texts. I see you in the studio there.
Yeah,
some texts coming in. But, you know, some people to join us on the air.
Yeah, that's
what
I did. I told them the number is 347-426-3904. Give us a call. We would be glad to talk to you. So I'm just, I am looking here, Mr. Edwards, and just seeing some stuff here going on. And one thing, you know, I'd be remiss not to mention this. There was a young lady, 22 years old. She's a blogger. She created for Brown Girls. It was a blog where she very, very popular blog. She's 22 years old. She talked about it was created to celebrate the beauty of dark skin while combating colorism and promoting self-love as her mission mm-hmm. statement. And she committed suicide last week. And, you know,
oh,
her mother passed
God.
Away. Yeah.
Okay.
It says that Brown, according to the News One network, Brown was allegedly suffered with mental illness, including depression, and social media reaction to her death was went viral right away, because she had a lot of positive things going on. You know, the contest, there's one thing where she asks African-American, dark-skinned African-American girls to put lipstick on and send her a picture. So she's going to do mm-hmm. this big mosaic kind of piece, and it would have been really great to see that. And I hope her father, who has been on her Facebook account quite a bit, letting the public know. I hope they don't drop that. I hope they make that happen, and I hope we get a chance to see her work that she has done, you know, up to that particular point.
And you say she was 22 years of age?
22 years old, yes.
Yeah.
22 wow. years old. Wow. Yeah, just gone, wow. just gone. Wow. Now, Mr. Edwards, I don't follow sports, okay? But I am actually in the studio here. That's kind of like, let me just find it here. I am in the studio, and I heard this on the radio this morning. You know, in the morning on the way to campus, I listen to KQRS, and they do a lot of sports stuff in the morning.
Okay.
That, but
they're kind of taking the place of K-Fan. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so now I'm looking at a story because this morning they said that this coach from Mankato State, got his job back because he had – allegedly, he had pictures. You know how you take pictures of your kids in the bathtub and things
yes,
like
I'm
that?
Yes, I'm very much aware yeah. of the story, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
He had a press conference yesterday announcing, in tears, but that he... what happened, an arbitrator dismissed the charges and allegations against him and ordered Mankato University, Mankato, to rehire him as the head football coach at Mankato State. And this is going to be very interesting. He had obtained a position as coach at Minot State in Minot, North Dakota, which is kind of like a Division III. Mankato State is considered to be, well, Division II, maybe Division I-A, if you will, but not up there with, you know, of course, the University of Minnesota and institutions like that. But what was your question, Mr. Allen?
Well, you know, the football team refused to practice with him today. They stood in unity. It's just a breaking story here. Actually, it was posted at 8:34 p.m. tonight, just right after 4 minutes after we went on air. The players refused to practice, and they want the interim coach back. And there's a picture of, you know, these about 30, 40 white players, about 3 African-American players in the picture from MSU Mankato. And they sent representatives from the state to go talk to these guys. But there's a picture, there's a video, there's a whole 9 yards here because they would not.
Wow. Practice. I'm a little surprised, Mr. Allen, to hear that the players were certainly encouraged. Now, that has to be only about half of the team because Mankato – state normally their full contingent is probably about 60, 65 players. But, you know, they really need to think this through
mm-hmm.
because we're talking about jurisprudence. We're talking about due process, if you will. I mean, the coach went through everything that he had to do. First of all, the county attorney there declined to prosecute when it became obvious that they really didn't have a case. They told him they didn't have a case. Of course, they had fired him. As I said, Minot State in North Dakota, you know, they didn't have a problem, and the players at Minot didn't have a problem. I'm not quite understanding what the Mankato players are thinking, if you will, but the university and the taxpayers of Minnesota are probably looking at a situation where they could, taxpayers could be on the hook for $10 or $15 million in damages, mm-hmm. if you will, because a arbitrator has ruled that he has to be given his job back and that Mankato was totally wrong. Maybe Mankato, the state of Minnesota, should have used some of these players to have given testimony before the arbitrator, and they could explain to the arbitrator why they thought this coach did not deserve due process, because the situation, you know, it was a private matter to the extent that, I mean, he was taking pictures of his small children, 1, 2 years old, and they were running around the house, you know, with their birthday suits on, et cetera. Maybe it was not the best thing that he happened to take it with a state-issued cell phone, if you will, and I don't know, some way or another, hit the cell phone. I remember the case well. The cell phone was messing up. He took it in to have it repaired. The technician who was repairing it saw these pictures of these little children and running around in their quote-unquote birthday suits. In other words, they were naked. And he immediately notified the administration, and next thing you know, they were charging the coach with being a pedophile.
I don't, and a child molester, I don't think that they really realized that, you know, these were his children, and many of the pictures were taken with his wife, you know, in the same room, and they were laughing. I mean, it was a part of the family experience, and these are very private matters, very, very private matters to that extent. You know, as I said, he probably was a bad choice that he put it on a on state property in the case of the cell phone or the video. But I'm really kind of shocked, Mr. Allen, that the players refused to go on the field because technically they could wind up losing their scholarships. And all somebody, you know, advises them on that, you know what I mean? If not, the state of Minnesota, Mankato, can get ready to probably pay $5, $10 million in damages to the coach. He can go back and get him a job anywhere.
Yep. That's good. They already have to give him, from what I understand, Mr. Harris, you might clarify this. They already have to give him his full back pay for the 20 months that he wasn't working. So I don't know
how much
his salary was, but, you know, a coach of a Bush League team, like, if I is making six figures a year with incentives and stuff, and he might have.
I think I saw at one point a year ago probably about $320,000. He had a good program, too, by the way. He was a winning coach. In fact, the team that he was coaching at the time that he was removed won the Division II national title.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they sure did.
Last year. And, boy, you know, you get the right kind of slick attorney, and that attorney starts, you know, appealing to a jury because the Mankato and that surrounding area were deeply divided, just like the situation up there in Little Falls, where we have a former CIA agent who shot and killed two young burglars in his home. I mean, nobody wants to see that happen, but they had been harassing him and et cetera. I guess they didn't realize that this gentleman was a trained assassin, and he, you know, laid in wait. They broke into his house. They came all the way down into the basement. He waited, and he shot and killed both of them, you know, and that trial has started. Well, it has split the community up there in Little Falls. Well, in the case of the coach, it has greatly split the community there in the Mankato, North Mankato area. So, boy, that's going to be rather interesting. You say that just has been breaking on the news line? Oh, yeah, I see it here. Okay, and we've been on the air. Yeah,
since we've been on the air, 8:34, a Star Tribune popped it up. And then today's the 16th, right? Yeah, it has to be the 16th. It's Wednesday the 16th. I'm looking at this news that's coming up, Mr. Edwards. It's just, you know, the Roseville cops sue over arrest involving use of force. You know, this Victor Hernandez.
Actually, it's 15th, Mr. Allen. So, when they send those out, they do an advance date. So it has the 16th on it, I guess, for publication on the 16th. But today is still the 15th. Yeah, but go ahead.
Reading news.
What about
the
police?
That's right, because I had to do my income tax last night.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so there was the police in Roseville are being sued by Victor Hernandez. And Victor Hernandez was a looks like a Mexican American guy who actually it is Wednesday the 16th because yesterday Tuesday was the 15th. I think someone just texted me and said it's the 16th. Okay, fine. He was beat pretty bad and tasered. And he sued in the Roseville Police Department. This just released at 9:13 p.m. on the Star Tribune website. The officer yelled, "Get to the ground." Grabbed him by the neck and slammed him down, the suit says. He fell to the ground with enough force to shatter the phone, the suit says, his phone. And he says, when he was pulled to his feet, the officer said, "You don't speak English at all, do you?" Hernandez was charged with two misdemeanors, obstruction of legal process without force and failure to obey a police officer, but the charge was later dismissed, the suit states. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's going to make some, he's going to live the American dream in a minute, you know?
Yeah. And you're actually correct. That text there was correct. Yes, today's the 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was the 15th. These days be slipping by. Roseville police have had some problems in the past. In fact, 2 years ago, they were involved in arresting two young African-American female professional players for the Minnesota Lynx,
mm-hmm.
one of them being Miss Augustus.
Mm-hmm.
And Police told them they looked like shoplifters because, I mean, they had jeans on and were casually dressed. Of course, them jeans probably cost about $150. But, you know, and these young ladies certainly could afford it. But there have been some problems out there in Roseville all of a sudden. Boy, I tell you, it's just not going well for our police. You know, you had, and nobody wants to talk about, you know, you had the police chief out here in our suburb of Robbinsdale, which is adjacent to the city of Minneapolis for our national and international listeners. And he got busted in a sex sting operation and was paying $150 for oral sex and anal sex, by the way. And he kept it hid for over a month. Yeah, he kept it hid for over a month. And then somebody at the police department in Fridley, where the arrest took place, happened to see his picture in some kind of police benevolent gathering and said, oh, this is the guy that was arrested in the sting operation last month, in other words, back in February. And so the city council here in Robbinsdale, or out there in Robbinsdale, gave him the chance to resign, which, by the way, saved his pension. Uh-huh. But nobody, you know, there's nobody talks about it. I mean, you know, everybody keeps quiet, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And by the way, and we're on the police thing, and those phone lines are open, particularly for some of our Somali listeners and et cetera. We have a heck of a situation right now in the Minneapolis Police Department where a promise had been made by our beloved mayor, Bessie Hodges, to the Somali community that there would be a significant increase in Somali officers. And they had someone ready, a young Somalian who had been a successful candidate in St. Paul, had come through their cadet program, and then he wasn't hired. I don't know if there was some homeland security issue or et cetera, but in January, February, and we also talk about it on our TV program to air this coming Sunday here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, Betsy Hodges, our beloved mayor, indicated that he would be brought into the Minneapolis Police Department, and so the list came out a week ago, a week and a half ago. There were 40 positions for, you know, successful candidates, and he was like 67. So he didn't make it. And what's happened, the Somali leadership, and particularly on the city council, had been told just to kind of keep their mouths closed and, you know, it's no big thing, and we'll work on it, okay? But it's impossible because this will be the second straight all-white recruitment class for the Minneapolis Police Department. And the question was raised on, well, you know, where are our civil rights organizations? And it was said to me that they had not reached, that I like the words that are being used nowadays, they had reached an understanding, and there would be no need for them to discuss this matter with the mayor or the chief. But the Somali community really got it stuck to them. And by the way, this comes out of there is so much violence going on right now. We had numerous shootings last night involving Somalis out by the mall out there on Pleasant, shootings over on Cedar by the Taco Bell, if you will. And then, of course, the African-American community, we had a major gun battle on Oliver and Loring last night, if you will. And, of course, we've had two Somali citizens, one female, one male, shot to death, execution style. And then we had two young African-Americans shot right outside of Target Field after they had just completed their work at about 2:30 in the morning. We had three young sisters shot and wounded in North Minneapolis. We had another sister 3 days before that, and this is all 2 weeks ago, shot and wounded. And, of course, you know, we have the continued homicides. And we actually had some gunmen try to storm our major hospital here after the two young men were shot. By the way, one of those young men, Mr. Allen, you had asked me about him in the production meeting, one of those young men has been paralyzed. He would be paralyzed for the rest of his life. So we have all this violence, and I'm hearing now that what's being said is that some of our training organizations are saying that they will provide training and will bring an end to violence in the city, and they're going to go in and mediate with the warring gangs and factions and et cetera. And so, you know, again, the phone lines are open. Now, we're on for another half hour, Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, let's get the number, because with the violence is something that we clearly are not talking about here in the Minneapolis community, if you will. Somalis are at full combat, if you will. There'll be a meeting tomorrow night at one of our Northside churches to talk about the violence and bring the warring factions to the table, whatever that means. I would be interested, if, you know, if anyone out there would want to call us and give us a better understanding on how that could be done. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly. Here's the genesis was that sensational gun battle on Gold Valley Road a couple of days ago, where you have that video that's gone viral of a car, a Chrysler 300, actually going straight up in the air. I thought it was, you know, the car was going to, you know, come over the top of the utility pole. That was quite a battle. A lot of shots fired, a lot of police with their guns out, et cetera, all around the area of North Commons and back through there.
Yeah, and I have that tape. I'm sorry, Jess, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just said I have that tape, you know, whenever you're ready. So.
Oh, why don't you go and play the tape, because the tape is kind of a reflection of what's happening as Mr. Allen has been in his laboratory.
They're chasing us, man. They're chasing us. We got to get out of here. We got to get out of here. They're chasing us. Oh, man. Oh, no. Oh, there's a pole. Drive up the pole. Drive up the pole right now. Come on. Drive up the pole.
Okay, that was that piece there. But anyway,
like I said, the phone lines are certainly open. We, you know, we, our community needs to hear the plan, if you will, the ideas. Maybe once in a while the plan can be discussed with the rest of the community. Now, here's the reason I'm saying this, and this is part of our responsibility as a news entity. There will be a meeting Friday in which the U.S. attorney, county attorney, judges, some high-ranking judges, high-ranking command officers of the Minneapolis Police Department, the Sheriff's Department, et cetera, will be involved in discussing the Negro problem. Oops. Only problem for our leadership is that this meeting is by invitation only. And did you know I found out that none of our leaders that are always identified as being on top of this are not invited?
Yeah.
How do you do that, Mr. L?
Well,
should our leaders be upset with that?
I don't know if they should be upset, because they're not, you know, just like you mentioned like less than two minutes ago about the, you know, they're going to have a meeting tomorrow night at a church to talk about stemming the violence. If this is just something that they've done over and over again, Mr. Edwards, they're looking for some money. You know, they're looking for someone to fund their mission to go out in the streets. There was a day when this kind of stuff was happening, that the people would come out of their houses and gather and walk up and down the streets and talk to these people. You know, they wouldn't get paid to do it. They would just do it. You know, that's called show the community some love, okay? Now, you need a grant to protest. You got to get a grant to walk on the streets and tell people not to do drugs and not to shoot each other. You need a grant to make sure this lady gets a bus ticket to go to the grocery store on a quarter. I mean, you need a grant for everything, because these people are not proactive. They don't believe in being proactive and taking care of stuff. And it's just kind of a rotten shame that it goes down like that. But, you know, our leaders, and I can't call them leaders either. We just got to call them spokespersons, because, you know, they want to jump in front of the camera anytime the video is playing and, you know, say what they want to say. And it's irrelevant, because those people don't represent me at all. They'll represent a lot of folks.
Right. Well, let me say this, because I know that there are, you know, the critics. We have our critics who maintain that, you know, really our voices should be silent, if you will, and too much information is getting out. But on this meeting of very, very high-powered white politicians elected and appointed, which we will be discussing your future as African-Americans, and particularly the future of your sons and definitely your sons and your daughters, the meeting is being coordinated by the chief's special liaison to the minority, quote-unquote, community, Mr. Sherman Patterson, who was in the mayor's office under R.T. Ryback with kind of the same title. Now, the question has come up about the the names on the list, if you will, and what folks are basically saying that these are trusted public officials, particularly in that you will have the U.S. Attorney, Andy Luger, if you will. You'll have, of course, Mike Freeman. You'll have others that will be there, and there will be, you know, things discussed that may upset presence of Negroes who may be in the room because they're talking about the facilitation of certain kinds of control mechanisms, increased sentences, things like that, if you will. But again, so that folks are clear, is that for those that are interested and say that they, you know, want to be there and speak for a community, is Sherman Patterson, special liaison for minority affairs out of Chief Janae Harto's office, is the point person.
Oh.
And that meeting will be Friday.
Oh, wow.
Give that phone number again, Mr. Allen. Maybe it's
347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the phone lines are wide open, and I'm not answering any texts anymore. You guys are just going to have to call in and ask. Don't be shy. You'll even have to use your real name. But and that's okay, too. But Mr. Edwards, also in breaking news at exactly 8:42 p.m. tonight. And the reason why I'm following the Star Tribune, Mr. Edwards, because I've been following this heroin thing epidemic. All of a sudden it's an epidemic because it's killing white folks in the suburbs.
Yes, it is, in record numbers.
And so,
in fact, let me just say quickly for our end here in Minnesota, our senior senator, former county attorney, Klobuchar was in Mexico meeting with the federales, if you will, federal Mexican police, the Drug Action Bureau, and et cetera, talking in terms of the pipeline here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, boy, there is a pipeline here. We refer ourselves, again, for the purposes of authenticating. You know, it's kind of like before you push the button, send a rocket off, like what's probably getting ready to happen in the Ukraine. You want to authenticate the code numbers, right? You know, you don't want to push the button and the silo door doesn't open and the rocket impacts the silo and blows up, you know, half the countryside. Mm-hmm. But Paul McEnroe, investigative reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, wrote an interesting piece about a month ago about the heroin trafficking that was going on in Minnesota. And one of the things that he said in a private conversation was the issue of police activity on both sides of the border was discussed during the course of the article being prepared. The article took about 6 months, 7 months to put it together. And the question was asked of Mr. McEnroe, well, you know, are you going to take a look at that? Are you going to let the public know that the drug trafficking is so lucrative, if you will, that, you know, unfortunately, some law enforcement officers get tied up in those kinds of activities. In fact, that was one of the reasons here in the Twin Cities that the Black Police Officers Association was destroyed in 2008 because some of the black officers were talking in terms of what was happening with the VOTEC unit. That's the Violent Offenders Task Force. Ooh, you know, really wasn't supposed to talk about that. And that information is contained. I mean, you know, the purpose of the program is informational. We're not getting any calls, and we just kind of open the big blue book, if you will. And this comes at a time when there's a hell of a battle going on in the state district court in a lawsuit filed by a very courageous white police officer by the name of Sergeant Michael Key, former lieutenant, and police officer of the year here in Minnesota in 2006, who exposed the disastrous plot to destroy the Black Police Officers Association and punish black police officers for raising questions about who really was controlling the drugs in the African-American community. So this question was asked Mr. McEnroe, just like I said, a number of weeks ago, at what point were they going to talk in terms of the information in the Michael Key file, because the city of Minneapolis, first under R.T. Ryback and now under Mayor Betsy Hodges, are fighting tooth and nail to redact basically every name in the investigative report that talks in terms of those officers and politicians who were involved in really destroying the Black Police Officers Association.
Interesting.
Yeah, again, that's Sergeant Michael Keith's lawsuit. That lawsuit, Mr. Allen, has been going on for 6 years. It's the longest standing lawsuit, per se, in the history of the Federal District Court for the Federal District of Minnesota. Normally, one thing about the feds, they get you in there, and there's not a lot of motions for continuances and et cetera. And, you know, basically in about a year, year and a half, even in cases dealing with medical things, you know, you will have a trial date. This Michael Keith case has been going on since 2007.
Yeah. Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. So, but like I said, again, those phone lines are open, but I guess folks want to talk on one hand about the problem, but they really don't want to talk about it, do they, Mr. Allen?
No, not at all. Not at all. No, it's not a big topic of conversation. You know, we still have, you know, these people running rampant in the community and making deals under the table, and, you know, the community never gets the help. But, you know, when something happens, they holler, Mr. Edwards. They pick up the phone, they'll call, you know, leave a message on my email, or they'll call you, and, you know, we're supposed to drop everything we're doing and take care of that. But, you know, the time comes, it's going to be short. It'll be real short.
Now, I kind of cut you off, Don, because you had some thoughts as it pertains to this heroin problem here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It's taking so many white lives. I mean, those are the important lives.
I mean, that's just part of the Minnesota Nice, the hypocritical Minnesota Nice piece, you know. Now, there are brothers and sisters down in Hennepin County Medical Center probably right now suffering from the effects of heroin. They're in treatment. They're all over the place. And this does not get any attention. And I just want to tell you how this is going to work, Mr. Edwards. So now the white folks in the suburbs are starting to OD. They're getting bad heroin or too strong of heroin.
Real bad heroin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're falling over, dying as soon as they stick the needle or snort it or however they do it. But, see, what's next is there's a rash of African-American women with HIV. And these guys are coming into town, you know, picking up prostitutes and stuff like that and taking it back home to their wives. And I'm expecting...
Yeah, particularly along Lake Street and in North Minneapolis. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and they're not realizing that one of the areas with the highest concentration of diagnosed confirmed HIV AIDS in women 13 to 21 is North Minneapolis.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
And so, you know, and this was after, when this epidemic first started to hit, Mr. Edwards, a lot of people received funds to address this. And this is how I think. A lot of people, and probably you think like this too, Mr. Edwards, but a lot of people don't think like this, so I'm just going to go take their time. Ain't no one calling, so I'm just going to talk.
Yeah.
And so you get money, say $250,000, okay? There's this thing called AIDS, HIV. We need to snip it in the bud. We need to stop it. We need to make sure people know what this is, you know. We need to push some morals, some standards, you know, get married, be monogamous.
Kind of like community values. Right.
The community values, okay? So
okay.
There's agencies that did get $250,000. What they did
was
buy condoms. It's like, yeah, you can do it, just put a condom on. That's the message they sent to high. No one really went into that third and fourth grade, at those grades where they decide how big the prisons are going to be later on down the line, you know? No one went into those third and fourth grades and said, okay, this is what's going on. This is what's going to happen. If you do this bad behavior, you guys have to stop. You know, this is – and really concentrate because, see, and I don't mean to mix things up, but the prison people are smart. They'll gauge by the level of test scores and intelligence for the third and fourth grade to determine how big the prisons or how much room they're going to need by the time these guys turn 18 or graduate.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, so no one went that direction, you know, and almost every one of these places that receive money, they have some bowl on it with a bunch of, you know, cheap condoms that rip. you know, and I know that from experience. You know, I wasn't married all the time, but
okay,
you know, you're looking at that, and I'm like, wow, you know, how is that even happening? How did North Minneapolis get plugged up?
Well,
that
let me just cut in for a minute, you know, Ron Edwards from the left, because I do have to correct you, my friend. There was a rather interesting and more than fairly effective program. Actually, it was 20 years ago. It emanated out of Turning Point.
Okay.
And it was at that time being run by probably one of the most knowledgeable persons in the area of infections and HIV and et cetera, a gentleman by the name of Rex Marshall, who is also the founder of Kwanzaa here in Minnesota. Mr. Marshall had quite a program. But what started happening was that political pressure started being applied, and some way or another, Turning Point no longer started getting funded, if you will, for their HIV program, which included classes, testing, and et cetera. And ever since that program at Turning Point under Rex Marshall went into an eclipse, if you will, you know, it's been real hard to talk in terms of a program that provides knowledge, understanding, wisdom, and suggested strategy. And you're absolutely correct. The Minneapolis Department of Health, the Minnesota State Department of Health, federal government, clearly shows, in fact, some maintain that we're at an epidemic level of infection here in Minneapolis, and particularly North Minneapolis and et cetera. And the thing about clean needles, remember at one point a decade ago, in fact, I think Gary Cunningham was the administrator up there then, too. They were talking about clean needles.
Mm-hmm. They're still
and,
giving
I don't even know if they have that program anymore.
Yeah, that program still
and
has.
With this heroin situation, which we're talking about, which is fascinating that we've not gotten or received any kind of call from anyone who wants to express an opinion or is concerned or is aware of the devastating effects of the use of the dirty needle and HIV and heroin and et cetera, because it appears that the system all of a sudden is trying to push folks to heroin more than the quote-unquote slash cocaine slash rock. And I got to tell you why that's disturbing. We first made mention of it on one of my television programs about 3 years ago. It was interesting to see the kind of response. And that is that, you know, Al-Qaeda, 2 years ago, the Department of State indicated that there had been detected a Al-Qaeda presence first coming through Mamer, former Burma, and Afghanistan, because, you know, that's where the poppies are grown, right, for the heroin. And it was indicated in a confidential report, per se, given to the Congress of the United States, that the Al-Qaeda had suggested and had been able to come up with the necessary money to begin to do some tampering with the processing of particularly brown heroin, if you will, which appears to be at the center of so many of these deaths in the more communities. In fact, there was a big public meeting in Rogers, Minnesota, which is about 35 miles west of here, because of the numbers of young white high school students who have OD'd. And
wow.
A speaker that night at Rogers, Minnesota, talked about the rumors that there was some contamination, intentional. Notice I used that word, Mr. Alvin, intentional contamination in the course of the processing, particularly of the brown heroin and et cetera. But people don't talk about it. And I know it is not anything that is even close to any kind of discussion in the African-American community, and God knows that it should be, based on what the health department's confidential reports are showing about infectious disease.
Wow. Wow, that's very
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So you know, it's out there. Their political leaders, in fact, you know, maybe at some point our federal congressman who's up for re-election this year seems to be pretty knowledgeable, blah, blah, blah. But maybe he and his staff can help us, particularly in that his offices are right in the middle of the one of the most infected areas of HIV, in the state of Minnesota. Maybe his staff can give us an idea about what the plan is for that. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm talking about the eradication.
Yeah. You know,
again, heroin is, it brings in a nice profit, if you will, and you convince young men that this is the way to, you know, get some Jordan Air shoes and tennis shoes, in other words, and you can sell it. And, you know, that'll be your economic base. And that way we won't really have to hire you other than, you know, those that are hired and controlled by the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA. But then again, as journalists, we're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, Ms. Evers, I just received a couple of texts. That's what that noise was in the background there. And I find this really interesting because the YMCA is actually giving Class B CDL. They have a Class B CDL training program. And the text that I received, there is a – let me just – they had something in St. Paul at the St. Paul YMCA. It's actually going to be
– On University, the one on University?
Selby Avenue, 375 Selby Avenue, April 17th from 1 to 3 p.m. They're celebrating some graduations. Graduation for people who graduated from a Class B, it looks like, CDL training program, and these people actually, it looks like they're getting them jobs as they graduate. And the text that I received, it was, of course, you know, another anonymous text, but it read, and I will share that with you, you might be worth checking out how we are putting folks into livable wage employment. I mean, if that's the case, that's one of our biggest gripes. You know, people say we sit up here and complain. If you can get people jobs and you have an avenue, you know, let us do some talking on the air here and tell people that, you know, and have some of your people that got jobs come on the air with us and tell us how they did it and how it worked out there. Because what we have now is garbage in this training program.
Well, let me just cut in. I want to make sure that I'm absolutely clear with what the person text you, because I think that there is a background story here. This person is saying that a YM or YW facility in St. Paul, located somewhere on Selby, has been taking the hard to employ into training programs and et cetera. Is that kind of the genesis and the gist of what's being said?
That is the genesis, and I'm actually texting her right now our phone number.
Let me text this to her. I see you texting in studio. That Y in St. Paul was a part of the group of 15 that was supposed to get the $700,000 from the Sports Facility Authority. Go back and pull up on your computer now. Five minutes. That Y, that specific Y, who the young lady who is over or was over there at that time, in fact, was on a trip, with a couple of our leaders to Washington, D.C. in the latter part of last year to the Black Congressional Caucus event. And some of the plans were discussed and also discussed there in Maryland. Was to bring in workers from outside of Minnesota. Now, the importance of that is that some of those were going to then be identified as having been trained here in Minnesota, which was going to take a little bit of work. And the principal person involved in the scam was told that that is a felony and they may not want to ruin their career and their position of leadership with a specific training organization. But the why, the piece that this young lady just texts you, if she is the person in question, that why is a part of the group of 15 that was to be given the $700,000 by the Sports Facility Authority to train workers. Asked her, does she concur? And if her YMCA, YWCA is not the one, then which one was it?
Let me see if I can find her here. I asked her to call in, Mr. Edwards, and she seems like she will comply here, but we don't have her logged into Switchbergs yet, so we'll just wait and we will see what's going on. Or maybe even I can do this little fine treat thing that I haven't done in a while. Let me just let me see here. Let me put this number in here.
Yes, because I'm pretty sure that she may very well be the young lady who traveled, as I said, late in 2013 to Washington, D.C. for the Black Congressional Caucus confab with heads of organizations here from the Twin Cities, if you will. And this would have been before the final application was made to the Sports Facility Authority. Is that your phone there?
Yeah, we're calling actually her calling.
This is Dan.
Is this Ms. Taylor?
Yes.
Hey, you are live on the air right now. I hope you don't mind because you were taking a minute too long. And we only have 4 minutes left, but I hear that the YMCA in St. Paul is doing some great things, and you have like a minute and a half to kind of just tell us what's going on.
And it's the YWCA.
The YWCA, thank you, in St. Paul. Yes, go ahead.
And one of our programs at YWCA St. Paul is the Employment Economic Development Department, and we have a commercial driver's license program where we train individuals who are either people of color or women to get into the industry of highway heavy construction and Class A, Class B, CDL driving.
Hmm. Okay.
So we have a contract with the state of Minnesota and the city of St. Paul where we train individuals how to work on the horizontal industry of construction.
Mm-hmm.
We are the only nonprofits in the Twin Cities that have a relationship with the Teamsters.
Mm.
So our individuals have no bench. We have a 90% placement rate. The average income of our people that we place is $18 an hour.
Not bad.
Could you just indicate very quickly where is your training taking place? Is it up at Hugo, or do you have a facility in St.
No,
Paul?
No, absolutely. We have partners with our. But first of all, we want to make sure that our folks are work ready because we're producing quality, not quantity.
Mm-hmm.
So we do health training where we're talking about life skills, financial stability, and things like just being able to show up on time to work. In addition to that, I have a partnership with the Cement Masons Union that teach individuals how to lay curbs, work on bridges, railways, and the highways. And then we also partner with the State Truck Driving School, which is in Grove Heights, that teaches them the Class B and the Class A commercial driver's license training so that our people can drive 99% of vehicles coming out of training.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, do you have any relationship with Summit OIC or the Minneapolis Urban League in this endeavor?
I'm sorry, do we what?
Do you have any relationship, training relationship, or business relationship with Summit OIC in Minneapolis or the Minneapolis Urban League, who also indicate that they do the same kind of training?
Well, we have a business relationship with all of the individuals that, you know, they carry out the same type of training. But
asked, though, OIC and the Minneapolis Urban League, do you have a direct relationship with them?
We have a direct relationship with them, yes. Do we share in our training? No.
Okay.
Have you approached the Sports Facility Authority and the Viking Stadium situation? Have you approached them about placement for your trainees?
Absolutely. And we have a relationship with the EAF where we're supposed to be part of that, where they're looking for individuals to work on the new developments in the Viking Stadium. Yes, we do.
Okay. I have one final question from this end as we're going to run out of time. Ooh, we probably are. Were you invited to the meeting with the Sports Facility Authority that took place this afternoon?
It's like a jungle sometimes.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, there's music in the back.
I know. I
can't.
That.
Yes, that's probably the NSA.
Yeah.
Were you invited to the meeting this afternoon?
Yes, we're invited to all of those things, yes.
Okay, all right. Ms. Ted, appreciate it, and, you know, feel free to give us a call next Wednesday and enlighten us a little bit more about the kinds of success that the Y is enjoying in St. Paul and the eastern suburbs. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, I look all forward right. to seeing you and Ron tomorrow.
Oh, yes,
possibly.
We look forward to talking with you. Okay.
Okay.
Well, Ms. Helen, right. I think we have to wrap it up. We've come to the end. We want to make sure that everything can be captured on demand, if you will. That was a very interesting conversation.
Yes, it was. And with that, we are out of time.
But